We are very grateful for the presence of some colleagues with us to aid us in a symposium that began last evening on this campus on the topic of freedom within the church. We had a gathering last evening in the Commons Room of Mackey Hall, and this morning at 11 o'clock there will be a continuation of this forum to take place in the conference room on the second floor of Mackey Hall. These colleagues who have come our way to help us in this forum are two members of the staff of the Christian Life Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, Dr. Harry Hollis and Dr. John Wood. Dr. John Wood is a relative newcomer to the staff, having joined that staff last summer. He is a native of Alabama and a graduate of Southwestern Seminary with a PhD in Christian ethics, having been received at Baylor University. And Dr. Wood will give the benediction this morning. Our speaker for the morning is one who has been on this campus many times. I believe this is Dr. Wood's first visit with us, but Dr. Hollis has been with us before. We are always glad when he comes our way. Dr. Harry Hollis is a Tennessean, a graduate of the University of Tennessee, and he holds 2 degrees, including a doctorate with a major in Christian ethics from the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville. Harry Hollis has distinguished himself in this field as a writer, as a speaker, as a conference leader, as a prodder of consciences, and as a compassionate colleague who combines integrity and intelligence in his work out on the frontiers of human freedom and of human concerns. At this time, it's my happy privilege to present him, and we shall hear him gladly.
At the seminary, he was sometimes called Mr. Orthodoxy. He let it be known that he was right on all the major doctrines. He had the right beliefs about the virgin birth, about the authority of the scripture, about baptism, about eternal security, about the Lord's Supper. Sometimes he questioned the beliefs of his professors, and behind their backs he wondered out loud if they were really orthodox. He was and is a friend of mine, but several months ago, this friend and his wife came to my office with their lives in shambles. Their marriage was breaking up. Their home was wrecked. And the reasons for this were complex. But one of the reasons was the fact that he had been so busy as a pastor making sure that people had correct doctrinal beliefs that he'd neglected his own family. Nestled in the book of Timothy is a passage of Scripture that speaks to this man, a passage of Scripture that speaks to us. It is found in 1 Timothy, the 5th chapter. Honor widows who are real widows. If a widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn their religious duty to their own family and make sure some return to their parents, for this is acceptable in the sight of God. She who is a real widow and is left all alone has set her hope on God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. Whereas she who is self-indulgent is dead even while she lives. Command this so that they may be without reproach. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his own family, he has disowned the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. And this is the verse that we will focus on this morning. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for his own family, he has disowned the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Now, here is a passage of Scripture that speaks to us this morning. It was written in the context of caring for widows. Families were neglecting widows, and thus they were a burden on the church. They were called, therefore, to minister to these widows. But it is not improper to expand the concern not only for widows, but also for all family members. Indeed, we read here that if we neglect members of our families, we are worse than unbelievers. This means that we can wrap ourselves up in the robes of doctrinal correctness and still be worse than infidels. It means that we can work so vigorously in the ministry of the church that we make John Calvin look lazy by comparison. And if we neglect our family, we're worse than unbelievers. It means we can memorize the Old Testament in Hebrew and the New Testament in Greek. And if we neglect our families, we're worse than unbelievers. The text calls for us to provide for family. The word in Greek means to anticipate, to look ahead and to provide for, to minister to take care of. And so we are called by this text to be concerned about members of our families and to see that they are provided for. And as we think today about freedom for women within the family, indeed as we think not only about freedom for women, but for freedom for men and women within the family, I invite you to meditate with me upon this passage of Scripture. The time when this was written, the widows were indeed often being neglected, as were other members of the family, and this is still the case today. Often in the seminary community, we find ways to neglect members of our families. We get too busy, too caught up in assignments, meeting responsibilities, having conferences with students, and thus ignore our own family members. You may remember in the book Confessions of a Workaholic by Wayne Oates, he tells of an experience that he had with his son. One day, his son appeared at his office at the seminary, and he greeted his son, but said, "I'm sorry, I can't see you now. My secretary tells me I have an appointment." And the son replied, "I know, Dad, you have an appointment with me. I've been trying to talk to you for weeks, and you've been unavailable, so I called your secretary. I made an appointment so we would have the opportunity to chat." And Wayne Oates says that was a revelation to him and changed his very style of relating to his children. So we often in the seminary life get caught up in a busyness of doing good, but nevertheless a busyness which causes us to neglect our mates or to neglect our children. We get caught up in a kind of race, a status race, a race for attention, a race at times even a competition to try to prove ourselves to be more humble than other people, and thus neglect our families. I ran cross country in college, and one of the most frightening parts of that experience was the start of the race. The gun was fired, and a throng of people at the beginning of the starting line there would rush off, and we would run not according to our own ability to run. We would run not according to the pace that we wanted to set. We would run to survive, because there would be elbows flying and feet churning and people breathing behind us, and we literally ran to survive. And sometimes in the seminary community and in the ministry of the church, as well as in society, we are running to survive. We have entered the race, but we no longer run at our own pace and our own ability, and thus we neglect our family. Therefore, it seems to me that we have special problems to which this text speaks to. In seminary life, we are often involved in penultimate family relationships. We see this as an interim period, a time when we really do not have the kind of ultimate quality relationships that we're going to have after we get out in the pastorate, or after we get out in the chaplaincy, or after we get out into the ministry for which we're preparing. We often postpone intimacy until after the next test takes place. But then after that text, test, there's another test, an intimacy and fellowship between husband and wife are postponed once again, and so we live in a kind of penultimate relationship. And so I believe this text speaks to us as it calls for us to provide for our families. And certainly it speaks to us as we think about freedom for women and for men within the family. There's too much of Goethe in us when he said, "As toward the devil's house we tread, woman's 1,000 steps ahead." There's too much of Jerome in our teaching when he said, "Woman, God's one mistake." Therefore, it seems to me that we need to look at this text to see what we should provide for family members. And thus, by doing so, we can move toward those quality relationships between males and females, between parents and children, between other family members in the context of the Christian faith. What should we provide for our families lest we neglect family members? Obviously, the text is talking about providing material possessions. The widows had been neglected. There was no government system of support, and therefore the family were responsible for this support. In the first place, then, it seems to me that we dare not neglect to provide for the material, the essential material possessions for family members. So often we're caught up in trying to warn of the perils of the idolatry of things, to warn of the dangers of materialism, that we fail to sound the note that security and well-being within the family requires the provision of essential material possessions. It seems to me that we have the responsibility to sound this note in the context of the church. I remember reading about children at the close of World War II who were brought to this country from war-ravaged lands and were placed in orphanages. And I remember in one orphanage, the children were unable to sleep. They had been terrified by their experiences and had been hungry and had been abused. And they would go to bed at night unable to go to sleep. And then a nurse hit upon an idea. After the meal and after they'd been tucked in, she gave each child a piece of bread to clutch that night while the child slept. And then the child, knowing that something would be provided to eat the next day, was able to go to sleep. We have a responsibility to provide essential material possessions for family members. The call to the ministry is not a call for us to allow ourselves to be manipulated into a poverty which causes us to fail to provide for family. And in the context of the family, husband and wife need to make decisions together about essential material possessions which have to be sought as a part of the family. Not only should we provide these possessions, these material possessions, we must also seek to communicate and seek to learn a right understanding of the use of these possessions, an awareness that sometimes small is enough. An awareness that these possessions should be used and not loved as ends in themselves. And so if we're going to provide for family, if we're going to cultivate genuine growth and freedom in family life, we must anticipate, we must look ahead, we must provide essential material possessions. But I do not think we do injustice to the text if we move beyond the provision of material possessions to talk about other provisions which are needed in the context of family life. And so in the second place, I suggest to you that we need to provide an atmosphere for love to grow within the family.